House Labor Committee to order. There's a quorum present. Members, you're going to find a copy of the minutes from the January 30th, 2019 meeting in your folder. Are there any additions or corrections? Representative Eklund, would you like to move those minutes?
I'd be happy to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting on the 19th, 30th, excuse me. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay, motion carries. Okay, next on the agenda is House File 6, but before we get into that, I noticed some folks in the crowd had some signs and some methods of display. If you can keep those lowered so everybody can see what's going on and hear what's going on and be respectful of everybody else's right to listen and participate here tonight. Thank you. Thank you much. I will move that House File 6 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division. We have the bill before us. Representative Mahoney, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. If I may, I'd like to explain the bill. I know there's some I looked at the agenda. There looks to be a few testifiers, not as many as the Energy and Climate Change Committee last night with 46, but I'd at least like to explain it and then see if bring up those testifiers, take questions, if that pleases the committee chair.
Today's your day, Chairman.
All right, so thank you. I'm sure everyone has the bill in front of them. Well, actually, I'd like to say a few words of why I'm bringing this particular bill. You know, over the years, I've had people come to me and say, my employer is this, my employer is that, in many particular ways, covering many issues. But none that irritated me more than if someone had worked an hour or 40 hours or however many hours, and they didn't get paid. They said, my employer didn't pay me. And whether it was that trucking company that went out of business suddenly a couple years ago, or the personal care, or it was just a lawn service. Yeah, I didn't get paid. And how do I get it? And then those that came in told the tale of how they actually went through the process in small Department of Labor and Industry or small claims court. And it's so frustrating because there was not much help to give. In Minnesota, if you work 8 hours a day, you should get paid for 8 hours a day. I spent 30 years as a pipe fitter, and my goal was to 8 hours work for 8 hours pay. And this bill came to me a few years back, and I want to give credit to Representative Garofalo, the last chair of the Jobs Committee, because he put $1 million in to hire more inspectors. That might be one of the reasons Dolly has numbers are up in terms of reports and recovery. 39,000 employees were affected by wage theft last year, and they were able to recover $12 million. One of the reasons that it was just $12 million is they can only recover minimum wage for hours work, not overtime or benefits. So what this bill does, and I'll go through it starting on page one, it asks on page one, line nine, I'll start right there, submissions of records. What we're trying to do, and it gets down to line 17, where it says in a specific format. If the department asks for records, they want them in a semi-usable form. So someone can't just come and drop a shoebox full of receipts off and say, you figure it out. And that's kind of what that is. They raised the fine for this to $10,000. because what has been recorded, not just in our state, but nationwide, is it's cheaper to pay the fine and continue stealing from your employees. Because if you can't, if the department doesn't have the records, they can't proceed with the case. Very hard. So they found that some employers, it was a business model. I'll just pay the $1,000 and keep taking money out of my employees' check. The other piece to that is the on page 2, line 3, it calls for the department to have the power to subpoena records from an employer so that that business model will not work any longer. If that employer is unwilling to hand over records so that the department can proceed with an investigation, they can subpoena them. Get down to the new language on 213. This is really the basis of what you're paid on. You know, are you paid by the piece? Are you paid by the hour, the shift, the day? And what's really kind of new in there is the piece. Because that they're finding that's a in our day and age, in our the tech economy, the new millennials with a contract, it's apparently coming into play there. I'm not sure I'll go any farther on that one. I'll go to page 3.5. All the records must be kept for available for inspection by the commissioner on the premise of the employment during reasonable office hours. And that's pretty self-explanatory. I've got to get all my notes undone here. What in section 4... Well, actually, in 3.8, again, they raised the fine from $1,000 to $10,000 because of that same thing as I spoke to earlier. It's cheaper to pay the fine than to actually provide the records and maintain the records. So now, although the $1,000 was never in its entirety used as a fine, it was typically used as a bargaining chip to get money for their employees, get money back to the employees rather than putting a fine on, because that was more important. Section 4, that's pretty much all new language. Get to page 4, line 1. We are now adding a gross misdemeanor, and we'll be going to judiciary and civil law. They wouldn't let me put in that has to follow the owner of the business so that he or she couldn't just bankrupt the business the next day and open up under a different name. But what I'd really like to see, and I think we should, I'll be working on it with judiciary, is how that can follow the owner of the company. So they can't just close the company down on Friday and open up with a different name on Monday. That's unfair. That doesn't, that allows them kind of off scot-free. So again, that's a gross misdemeanor with a $10,000 fine. Just so you understand, if you go into the convenience store and steal $500 worth of beer, that's a gross misdemeanor, not $10,000 worth of beer. You go into Target and you steal $1,000 worth of merchandise, that's a felony, punishable by going to jail. We're still not sending people to jail with this bill. You start getting into page 4, line 5, prohibitive practices. On line 6, no employer shall commit wage theft. It's not against the law in the state of Minnesota to steal money from your employees. It's nowhere in our statutes. We just put it in. I did forget my reading glasses at the office. On line 7, for the purpose of this section, wage theft is committed. And you can read that yourself. If they fail to pay the employee all his wages, the employer directly or indirectly causes any an employee to give a receipt for wages that were not paid. I'm sure the crack research staff has gone over this with all of those. But the important one to me is on line 18. An employer retaliates against an employee for asserting rights or remedies under this section, but not included, including but not limited to filing a complaint with the Department of Labor. We cannot have retaliation. We can't have retaliation. The simplest one is you get fired 2 days later for forgetting your stick rule or not prepping in the kitchen or taking too much time to clean the hotel room. That would be the simplest and most identifiable retaliation. There's a whole other ways that employers can retaliate against employees. Line 23, the commissioner may enforce this section and use an enforceable provisions in this section shall not preclude the use of other enforcement. What that's trying to get at is to allow police departments and other law enforcement agencies to also investigate. They can't up to this point, or under very rare circumstances. I find on line 28 where it says citations, it's really a nicer way to do it. If for some reason I'm the employer and I don't pay my wages to my employees on Monday or Tuesday or whatever day because I broke my leg, or my bookkeeper quit, there's a citation. And you can go in to the Department of Labor or send it in any way, shape, or form to the commissioner. The commissioner can look at the circumstances and waive the citation, just like a parking ticket, just like a speeding ticket. And or if you're got your problem, you can just pay your employees. And the commissioner can waive this. If you're not happy with the results from the commissioner's review, you can go to an administrative law judge. If you're not happy there, you can get, what page is that on? You can continue on up the chain of judicial remedies, all the way up to a regular old courtroom with a jury and everything else. The rest of this, we'll go to page 6. And starting on line 8, what we're doing here is requiring the employer to inform the employee what their wages are, what their benefits are, when the payday is, a variety of things. And I'll explain it this way. Many of you have driven around town or around the countryside or wherever and seen those signs, warehouse works $17 an hour. What they don't have to tell you is that they only pay once a month. And by the way, it says 17 on the sign, but you start at $12 an hour and you work your way up to $17 an hour. You know, they don't have to say whether it's 30 days, 6 months, or a year. And the reason they don't have to tell you that they only pay once a month, that gives them 4 weeks of money to steal rather than 1 week. So that's that part there. We also changed from the ability to do that. And I had some heartburn with this because I get paid once a month, but we're changing it to you have to get paid within 16 days, and then every 2 weeks after that minimum. So you can't get this long stretch of time where you're not getting paid, and they use the excuse that, well, we only pay once a month. The other piece that I think is really important here is down line 26 on page 6, where you have to tell the employee the address in writing. You have to tell them the address of the employer's main office or principal place of business and a mailing address. And then you have to tell them the phone number of the employer. And that's one of the reasons for that is you can use a post office box and you can change a post office box in a heartbeat. The phone number, unfortunately, it can be changed, but also quite often you don't have a way to contact the employer, and that's a problem. And now you will, at least for a while until they change their phone number. On page 7, again, you get to the rates of line 7. Starting on line 5, the employer shall provide to each employee written notice. And the list there, 1 through 9, kind of goes over some of the other things that I've already spoken to. Rate of pay, how you're paid, your shift, daily, weekly, by piece, by commission, any allowances. I'm sure many of you have heard that, you know, all of a sudden on the check, you see this little line that says, you know, $10 a day. You didn't know that you were getting lunch every day for 10 bucks, especially when you were bringing your lunch with you. That's one of the ways that monies can be deducted without telling them. List of deductions, dates on which a pay period start and end, legal name of the employer, physical address, phone number again, and the employer must keep a copy of the notice signed by each employee acknowledging the receipt of the notice. On line 23 starts a provision that's pretty interesting, and I didn't realize this until the advocates made some examples. But if you're going to change your company policies, you're going to change your pay period policies, you need to tell your employees and have them sign that they got that receipt, that they saw that. They know that they went from once every 7 days to once every 31 days. And again, on page 8, line 3 starts where we change the pay periods from the first a month down to every 2 weeks. At the bottom of page 8, we have blank appropriations because I'm waiting to see how much money I can pour into this particular personal grudge. crisis that we're actually having in the state of Minnesota. My hope is to maintain the appropriation for fiscal year 20 and 21 that we have and increase it so we can do a better job of policing this. There's also a percentage in here on line 29 where we're going to use that to inform employees through various agencies, whether it's through labor unions or some of the immigrant advocacy groups or any other group or low-income family groups, that they have this right. Because people are pretty afraid to mention that, hey, by the way, you should have paid me $100 more. So that's what this bill does. I hope you'll all vote for it. But we have some people that wanted to testify. So, Mr. Chair, I can take a couple of questions now, or we can go through all the testifiers first.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. What I would like to see done today is have the testifiers come up, and we'll limit their testimony to about 3 minutes apiece. We'll give a good measure of latitude if there's an interpreter involved. And after the testimony is closed out, then we'll open up the opportunity for questions to the author and the testifiers. So if the testifiers do, in fact, approach and testify, please stay in the room afterwards. So the first testifier we have up is Scott McClellan, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. Then Carla Arceo will follow Mr. McClellan. Carlos Para Oliveira will appear after the commissioner, and then Carla Arceo after that. I got it. Proceed, please. Identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Scott McClellan. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I oversee construction codes and licensing and the labor standards and apprenticeship divisions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I'm pleased to speak in support of House File 6, a bill to prohibit and prevent wage theft. And as the representative said, every year 39,000 Minnesota workers suffer from wage theft, resulting in nearly $12 million in unpaid wages. Wage theft occurs when employers refuse to pay their employees for work performed, violate minimum wage, prevailing wage, and overtime protections, make unlawful paycheck deductions, or encourage employees to work off the clock. And this issue often disproportionately impacts people of color, low wage, and female workers. In 2017, the legislature appropriated $500,000 per fiscal year to combat wage theft. And thanks to this investment, the department hired four additional investigators, one of which was designated a new wage theft outreach coordinator, who's currently implementing various strategies to engage and educate Minnesota workers on wage theft and employers. We've also streamlined our existing wage claim process, significantly reducing processing time so workers receive their final pay faster, as well as expanding our phone service hours. The Labor Standards Unit at the department receives more than 20,000 inquiries each year regarding wage and labor laws. And our unit averages 1,500 cases annually and has recovered nearly $5 million in back wages over the last 5 years. In 2018, the department processed a record number of final wage claims and secured final back and wages of $1.1 million for Minnesota workers. Our goals at the department include ensuring employees are paid the wages they're owed, conducting compliance and enforcement actions to ensure the prompt payment of back pay, and helping create a level playing field for businesses. We know that most employers in Minnesota correctly pay their employees, but there are some bad actors whose actions create serious ramifications for the economic security of some workers and their families. Between 2008 and 2016, 13 wage theft lawsuits in Minnesota totaled $59 million in back pay to 103,000 workers. And the department is currently involved in several open investigations, and we're working hard to restore lost wages to Minnesota workers and prevent wage theft from occurring in the first place. The legislation before you today will definitely strengthen the department's ability to combat wage theft and ensure more workers receive the wages they've earned. This includes cracking down on wage theft with tougher penalties for employers who commit wage theft and greater clarity for employees on their rates of pay, allowances, and paid time off accruals. Further, the legislation defines wage theft, makes it a violation of law, and prohibits retaliation against employees for asserting their rights under the law. And wage theft prevention is in fact a priority for this administration. We look forward to working with the author to refine the proposal as it moves through committee, and we thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate your attendance today. Next up, we have Carlos Para Oliveira, with two testifiers.
I will be interpreting for our members.
Thank you. Can you identify yourself and then the testifiers when they start?
My name is Carlos. I am here with CETUL, Centro de Trabajadores Unidos en la Lucha. And
Humberto Miseli.
Presentarse con su nombre.
Muy buenas tardes, señoras representantes del Estado.
Good afternoon, representatives of the state.
Mi nombre es Humberto Miseli y soy miembro de CETUL.
My name is Humberto Miseli and I am a member of CETUL.
Vengo a testificar ante ustedes, ya que soy un trabajador más que ha sufrido el robo de salario.
I can't testify today because I am one of the many workers who have suffered through wage theft.
Las grandes compañías han desarrollado estrategias o técnicas para poder efectuar esta práctica.
The big companies have developed strategies and tactics to keep on committing wage theft.
En mi caso, sufrí una serie de retenciones de salarios injustificadamente.
In my case, I received a series of wage withholdings without a justification.
Ante esto y ante prácticamente la negativa de oídos sordos a mis reclamos por parte de la empresa.
And because of the deaf ears of the company, they don't take this as serious as it is.
Busqué apoyo, busqué asesoría.
I had to look for help.
Setul me la dio.
And within that, I found Setul, and Setul has been supporting
me.
Me
hizo
that.
La investigación y me preparó un caso.
And so they helped me with starting an investigation against the company and helped me prepare a case.
Caso que llevé ante la corte.
And this case, I took it to a small claims court.
Y a pesar de demostrar mis argumentos sólidos, demostrando las violaciones en mi contrato, mi reclamo era de $13,000.
And even after, with my solid arguments, I demonstrated the violations in my contract, the court determined... Wait, never mind.
La corte dictaminó que se me pagara únicamente $13,000. Perdón, $1,300.
So the court determined that I am owed $1,300.
Beneficiando más así a la compañía.
Benefiting a lot more the company than me.
O sea, el equivalente de un 10%.
And that's only 10% of what I'm owed. I was owed $13,000.
Es por eso que vengo a testificar ante ustedes.
And that is why I'm here to testify.
Para que de alguna manera se pueda frenar, tratar de erradicar esta práctica del robo de salario.
In hope to search a way to find a solution to stop wage theft.
Es una práctica, un flagelo que lastima mucho a la clase trabajadora.
And this is a fraud that really, the consequences are being paid by the working people.
Por lo cual pedimos a ustedes se apruebe el bill antirrobo de salario.
In which I am here to say that please approve an anti-wage theft bill.
Que esto se considere como un crimen.
And for this to be considered as a crime.
Porque es un crimen quedarse con el salario que ya no les corresponde.
Because it is a crime to, for someone to keep the wages that is not theirs.
Pensamos que solamente de esta manera, para que puedan aplicarse leyes más fuertes donde se pueda sancionar severamente al infractor, podamos frenar con esta sucia práctica.
Yeah, and so together we hope to really build this law so that people who are committing wage theft have consequences and it's not on the workers.
Gracias por su atención.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Will the next testifier please identify themselves and proceed?
Buenas tardes a todos. Mi nombre es Keren Muñoz. Soy miembro de CETUL.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Keren Muñoz and I'm also a member of CETUL.
También he sido víctima de robo de salario en los diferentes trabajos que he participado aquí en Minnesota.
And I've also am a victim of wage theft and it happened in different works all around Minnesota.
Simplemente por el hecho de pedir mis récords, tuve represalias.
And I only asked for my employee record and for that reason I was retaliated against.
Y solamente me dio excusas tan increíbles como de que su contadora no sabía las reglas de Minnesota.
And I received several excuses, and one of them was that their accountant wasn't sure on how to apply these laws.
Que si yo era amiga de su esposa, ¿por qué estaba haciendo eso? Que el trabajo estaba muy bajo, que no tenía, que estaba casi en la quiebra. El punto es de que trabajando más de 60 horas solamente me pagaba 37, 38 horas por semana.
And they were telling me reasons of like, why am I doing this? Like, you're a friend of ours. We helped you get this job. But out of 60 hours that I worked, I only got paid 30.
Por eso es que necesitamos que se reconozca como un crimen y que se penalice fuerte a las personas que están cometiendo esto. Algo fuerte como cárcel, revocarle su licencia y también cerrarle su negocio.
And so that's why I'm here to testify, because this is a problem and we really want to pursue for it to be a crime. People are stealing our wages, and also like look for ways to penalize those who are stealing wages, even if we have to send them to jail.
Porque simplemente por el hecho de decir sí te lo voy a pagar, Nos traen vuelta y vuelta correteando al dueño y simplemente no nos pagan.
And because too, like, even if they say they are going to pay us, we still have to be running after them constantly, and we never get paid.
Y la ley en contra del robo ya existe. Ahora es como una esclavitud por debajo del agua.
And so there is a law for theft. That is there, but not for our wages.
Por eso es que queremos que se haga como un delito grave y que se tengan las consecuencias fuertes, porque el robo de salarios, se roba más en robo de salarios que en robo a propiedad.
And we really want this to get passed because there's a lot of things that we're paying ourselves and... ¿cuál es la última parte?
Que hay más robo de salario que robo a propiedad.
And there is more property theft than there's more wage theft than property theft.
Por eso es que necesitamos su ayuda para que esto se reconozca como un crimen. Gracias.
And that's why we need your support for this to be recognized as a crime. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Will the next testifier please identify himself and proceed?
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Mi nombre es Julio Hernández.
My name is Julio Hernández.
Y soy miembro de CETUL.
I am a member of CETUL.
Señora representante del Estado.
Yo, senators of the state.
Lo que quiero es que haya leyes que nos apoyen sobre el robo de salario o sueldo robados.
I want to see a law that's going to help us recover wages or stolen salaries.
Yo fui víctima también de robo.
I was also a victim of wage theft.
Y busqué ayuda igual, me la brindó CETUL.
And I was also looking for ways to recover my wages, and CETUL was the place I found it.
Y la persona, cuando yo le cobraba, se reía. Me dio dos cheques sin fondo.
And every time I asked the person to pay me, he laughed at me and gave me insufficient fund checks.
Decía que a él no le hacía nada porque él tenía mucho dinero.
And he would tell me that no one's going to do anything to him because he has a lot of money.
Pero yo sé y creo que ustedes nos pueden apoyar.
And I do believe that y'all, all of y'all can help us or support us.
Porque ese dinero que ellos nos quitan es un dinero que nos hace falta para nuestra familia.
Because the money that we do not receive is money that our family also does not receive.
Y por eso acudimos a ustedes, que ustedes están más preparados que nosotros. En nombre de nuestros compañeros, yo les pido que nos apoyen.
And that's why we're here, because you are more prepared and are able to do changes. And I'm here with my compañeros, co-workers, and so we really want your support.
Ya no queremos que haya ese robo porque es un crimen, es un antirrobo. Eso ha existido y siempre al que castigan más es a la gente más pobre.
And so we really want wage theft to be a crime. Everything else is stealing is a crime, and like the people who are paying the price is like us, the poor people.
Y disculpen, pero es la forma que nosotros podemos expresarnos ante ustedes para que puedan brindarnos esa ayuda y que las leyes rijan sobre esas personas supuestamente potentes.
And so, so we want to see these laws really affect those who are committing these acts in a higher penalty base and not something lower.
Es todo, señores, y gracias por escucharme.
This is all my testimony, and really, thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, and most particularly, thank you, Mr. Oliveira, for helping us out today. That's great. Appreciate it. Next up, we have Carla Arceo. And next after her, Kevin Osborne.
Good afternoon, all. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and say a few words to the committee today. I'm representing Frida Drywall. Frida Drywall is a Minnesota-based, woman-owned, VBE and TGB certified construction company that prides itself as one of the local leaders in the drywall service industry. All the jobs that my company does work on have to award through a fair bidding process. I employ over 50 employees who make a strong middle class wage and good benefits. We have moms and we have dads working on site. And sometimes I imagine, you know, what can be happen to one of them because it's not safety at work and die. So I imagine myself. But today in the construction industry, there are disloyal subcontractors. Subcontractors affecting our industry, paying in cash. They don't pay taxes. They don't look for the safety of their employees, risking the life of their employees. And they don't offer a long-term economic security for the families. It is a reality today in the construction industry. It is affecting business like mine, but even worse, it's affecting our community. Frida Drywall has been following the rules, and it's not fair the other subcontractors who are not paying taxes, workers' compensation, employees' benefits, can take advantage of our industry, winning jobs with low prices, because they pay very low rates to his employees. They pay in cash. I'm here representing all the loyal companies and business owners who are looking to make a positive change to benefit our people. I'm convinced the B Union Company offers security for us and our community. I can share my story with you, or I cannot change the law. You have the power today to change the law for our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Kevin Osborne.
I'm Arturo Hernandez.
Pardon me?
I'm Arturo Hernandez.
Okay. Arturo, okay. Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez, go ahead and proceed.
Okay, Mary. Last year, I worked for Painting America. It's a... The supervisor, Nick, has grabbed me to the job site and put me in contact to Eduardo Valenzuela. He's supposed to my former. And I worked for this guy for almost three weeks, and the guy don't give me pay to where he show up to pay. He gave me the address to get to him home, and the guy don't want to pay me in money. He want to give me some drugs to sales. He told me we make more money to sell this drug to give the money. And I thought, no way. I need my money because I need to feed my family. I'm a worker. And the money tariff is pretty much happened to the Spanish people because it's we don't know to the laws. We workers. We work real hard to make our money to feed and pay the rent, and feed the family and pay the rent. And I report to the Labor Department this case, but it's not supposed to happen this thing. It's these guys is doing all time. The company is support these guys to do this, to start to the money to the people. The pain in America, I speak to Nick and to give me application, job application, don't do it. He told me to, Eduardo is in charge. And I don't feel any job application, because the guy don't give me any. And this case, it don't happen only to me, it's happened to the other guys, to the other Spanish guys, but the guys don't want to make report in anything because it's scared. And I hope you guys pass the law and help to the, pretty much the Spanish people, because it's the Spanish people is kind of scared to report these matters. It's not only in this state, Texas, New Mexico, everywhere it's happened this thing. And One guy is making millions of dollars just for the work to the workers. And the guys don't pay taxes, don't pay anything. It's got to be to do something for this matter, man. And I hope is you guys pass the law. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you much for your testimony. Next up, Kevin Osborne. After Kevin, we have Faustino Constanti. Please identify yourself and proceed. My
name's Kevin Osborne. I'm here with Restaurant Opportunity Center, Minnesota. I'm a wine cook in Minneapolis. I've been in the industry 4 years. I'm here because in our industry, wage theft isn't the exception. It's absolutely the norm. It's built into, even if unofficially, it's built into our the business models. Come in for a couple hours or an hour before you start to set up your station, stay an hour or two after to clean up, off the clock, all of this. On top of that, it's common practice to fudge our timesheets so that overtime and hours move around to different weeks to avoid paying extra. And then on top of that, just to add insult to injury, if they can't fudge the timesheet enough, it's very common to steal tips and use that to pay a wage. So as you can see, it's a problem. In our industry, it's a big one. And honestly, it's, I'm not sure why we even have to sit up here and say it should be illegal to steal our wages. On top of that, for the Democrats, I mean, I think it's also not enough that you just take the politically comfortable role of opposing the Republican majority and use this as fodder. This is a problem, and unless you're willing to take on the Chamber of Commerce, the restaurant associations, and all the big business interests that are stealing our wages every day as a common practice, then you're just not doing enough for us. I think there's a lot of potential for workers right now, because it's such a huge problem, to stand up and to say, enough, that we need this bill because we can't count on our business owners to pay our wages. We need this bill to provide effective enforcement, to fund the agencies that will reclaim our wages and our tips, and on top of that, to provide actual real protection against retaliation that's just a habitual instinctive response amongst most of our employers. So I guess this is still in the very early stages of the bill, but right here, right now, I guess each and every one of you, Democrat, Republican alike, has a choice. Are you going to side with us that are getting our wages stolen or with the business interests that are stealing them? I guess just to end it, do me a favor. Actually pass a bill that's in favor of workers for a change. Thanks.
Thank you much for your testimony. Next up is Faustino Constanti. Please identify yourself. Please pronounce your name correctly.
Good afternoon. My name is Faustino Constanti, from Constanti Construction. I came from other state. My business is already registered under Minnesota state. Why am I here? I want to be your guest. To be your guest, I want to start and write. I want to pay my taxes, my employees. And I hear something that I don't really like it. I don't like it when somebody don't pay taxes. This makes me look bad to my community. I'm looking for better life for my family, for my workers. I wanted the opportunity. How you can help me? In other words, I need help. How you can help? This for me is I'm looking easy. You know, when I'm going to go, bidder jobs, I'm starting bidder jobs with the big companies, big GCs. When they see my proposal, they throw away. They put it away. Why? Because they thinking I'm too high. How am I going to look like if I'm bidding lower? You guys gonna like it? I don't think so. Why? Because I need to stop. I want to help to stop with the money wage theft. I'm not afraid for nothing. I pay my taxes since 2012. My business, my company, Constante Construction, since I'm business since 2012 from Oklahoma. Why I've decided to run the north? Because the same problem. I hear the same problem. The people don't pay. The people kind of use the people to kind of slaves. But I see something I don't like and I want to change. Like I say, when I go to the big companies, the big GCs, they decide hire somebody else more cheaper. If it might be, it's like $1 million, they decide for $500,000. If I bring in my 10 employees, what are you going to do? I am not union. I want to sign up with the union. I come here by, I want the opportunity to start and write on this state. I want to help with the theft, wage theft to stop. So, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Allegra Bipas. And after that, Adam Hansen. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Allegra Bipes. I live in Minneapolis. Approximately 10 months ago, I started working as security for Minneapolis College of Art and Design. 14 of my last 20 paychecks have been incorrect and have been shorted. On some, I was not paid for all of the hours I was worked, or I was not paid for my overtime hours. In others, I was not paid my appropriate shift differential or holidays. Each and every time, I would have to negotiate with my boss and payroll to be paid what I was due. I would have to prove to them that I was shorted money. While in college at the U of M Crookston, I worked as under a contract security company for American Crystal Sugar, a beet processing plant up in Crookston. My first week of work was considered my training, and I had to sign a waiver stating that I would not be paid for this training. This is wage theft. Most of the employees were college students just like I was, and were unaware that they had to be paid for their training time. When I would work overtime hours, I wouldn't get paid for it. In addition, I was never paid my first official paycheck. When I approached my boss with this matter, I was told that I could be terminated for investigating this. For people like me who live paycheck to paycheck, we need to be paid all that we have earned on time. Missing wages means I have to choose which bills I pay and which ones I collect late fees on. If my vehicle breaks down, am I going to be able to afford it so that I can get to work? Many people think that wage theft is not very common, and they don't recognize it when it happens. Both of the employers in my stories today are reputable businesses and are very well able to pay their employees correctly and on time. Companies that short their employees, as I am being shorted now, cannot be allowed to get away with this any longer. We need to hold those responsible for these thefts accountable for their actions. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Hansen? Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Adam Hansen. I'm with the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. Our contractor members and their employees work throughout the state and in your districts building schools, retail establishments, hospitals, multifamily housing, and more. On your way back to your offices at the state office building, when you go through the Capitol basement, look down and look at the tile, the quarry tile, the mosaic tiles. One of our members did that during the Capitol restoration project. We're pretty proud of that. I want to thank Representative Mahoney for acknowledging last month and earlier today that 99.9% of all employers in the state do the right thing, and they do right by their employees. They pay them on time. They pay them for the work that they performed. But what our contractors have concerns about this bill is the penalization of honest mistakes that can occur in payroll record keeping and accounting, especially in the construction industry. If an employer intends to underpay or cheat their workers, the Department of Labor and Industry can already penalize them under current state law. Wage theft is already illegal. It is not uncommon for our contractors' employees to be able to do more than one discrete job classification on a project. For example, installing a door is carpentry work, but hauling that door from another location on the job site to where the door is installed is laborer's work. And on a prevailing wage project, if a time card is filled out by a construction worker or maybe a job site foreman, and there's an honest mistake as to how much time that person was a carpenter or a laborer, that could trigger these wage theft laws as written, which means a steep fine and a citation. Additionally, some of our contractors have multiple offices throughout the state. In construction, unlike most industries, it is uncommon for a construction worker to go to the office at the start of each day. They go directly to their job site. Line 2.32 in the bill creates ambiguity about record keeping for those employees in those circumstances where there's multiple locations. Where does an employer keep the new required reporting records and requirements if they have multiple office locations? Which employee records do they keep at which of those locations? Getting either of those wrong in those instances can land a fine of up to $10,000 under this bill. Again, even if it was an honest mistake. When a contractor gives a raise or a bonus to their employees under this bill, the employee would not receive those benefits or wage increase unless and until that employee signs a notice saying that they accept that new raise or bonus, and then they would get it 7 days later, not right away. Finally, this bill creates a guilty until proven innocent regime for employers. The burden of proof shifting occurs in your bill on line 5.31 when an employer is issued a citation and they request an expedited hearing on the matter. The employer must prove their innocence to an administrative law judge, unlike a criminal case where the state has to prove each element of a crime that a defendant commits. The exact opposite occurs here. The employer has to prove their innocence. The bill in its current form would take that 99.9% of good employers who are doing the right thing and put a target on their back simply for honest mistakes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Next up, we have Lauren Schadthorst. You can go ahead and identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schadthorst, and I serve as the Labor Management Policy Director for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber represents 2,300 employers and over 500,000 employees in every industry across the state. The majority of our members are small and mid-sized businesses, and our members also include many of Minnesota's Fortune 500 headquartered companies. I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony and share the views of our members on this important issue. While we have concerns with the broad approach laid out in House File 6, we share your commitment to protecting employees from this crime. I'd first like to emphasize that the Chamber and its members do not support, condone, or approve of wage theft as a business practice. And like the testifier before me, we do appreciate the recognition that 99.9% of employers across the state share that belief. This bill, however, would make any failure to pay wages wage theft, regardless of intent. A few years ago, it was reported that the Minneapolis public school system implemented a new payroll system. During its rollout, teacher and other school district employees reported missed paychecks, overpayments and underpayments, and thousands of dollars in unexplainable deductions from their checks. Our members are concerned that under the bill, even a mistake is criminal. This is especially concerning for some of our smaller employers who may not have more sophisticated payroll software systems, if at all. An inadvertent mistake or error should not subject them to the serious penalties included in this bill. Our members are concerned that the bill does not include reasonable good faith employer protections or due process provisions. We are also concerned that this bill overreaches in its application and enforcement by the onerous record-keeping requirements for employers and frequency of paycheck provisions that doesn't take into account some employers in Minnesota whose cash flow or other business needs require pay cycle of once per month. While we are proud that Minnesota employers are regularly recognized as providing some of the best workplaces in the nation, any action that reflects poorly upon our business community is something we take very seriously. We look forward to working with all of you in the department to accomplish our shared goal of protecting employees from wage theft and hope to find a workable solution. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That completes the scheduled testifiers. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to weigh in on this bill? Now is your chance. Thank you. Please identify yourself and limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Hi. My name's Robin Pakala, Mr. Chair of Committee. Thank you for having me. I'm a home care worker. In the field of home care work, wage theft is prevalent. It happens a lot. We work a lot of hours that we don't get paid for because of paperwork errors. I work for a company called Crystal Care. I didn't get paid for 45 days. We still continue to work for our, there were 600 employees that didn't get paid $1.4 million. We still continue to work for our clients during that time because nobody else, the system, the way the system works, sometimes it takes 2 weeks to a month, to a month to get switched over to a different company. So our clients were going to be hanging. There would be nobody there for, to care for them. So on the 46th day, the company that I work for filed for bankruptcy. Now, if you or I stole the $1.4 million from the state, we'd be in jail. So it happens a lot in the home care sector. One of the things I found out that this bill takes care of is they say, well, you can file a claim with Dolly. You have to wait 31 days to file a claim with Dolly. Do you know what happens in 31 days? You lose your home. You lose your house. You can't feed your kids. So one of the things that this bill is going to take care of is you can file a claim quicker. And I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Any other testifiers? Okay, seeing nobody jumping out of their chair, we can proceed to questions to the author or any of the testifiers. And I would like to start those questions off myself. And we've heard a lot from people that have been damaged by wage theft, and it's obviously that the workers and the families are damaged. We heard some numbers of $5 million of wages recovered by the department. I'm just wondering if the commissioner could probably answer this. The state of Minnesota and the federal government, how much tax revenue did they lose because of just that one single instance? If the commissioner can come forward and get a couple more questions.
It's time to call a friend on this one.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Scott McClellan, the Assistant Commissioner for Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, I don't have that information, but I'd be happy to research it and respond back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. We also heard of 40,000 cases being processed. Is there any way of tracking how much tax revenue has been lost on those cases?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm unaware of quantifying that, but again, I'd be happy to look into it with our subject matter experts.
I'm looking forward to hearing some of those numbers as accurate as you can develop them. Yeah. That would be great. Secondly, you may not be the person to ask, but you can take a shot at it if you want. All of our legitimate contractors, businesses in the state of Minnesota pay their fair share of workman's comp insurance. And when somebody defrauds a worker out of their wages, I'm just assuming that that employer doesn't have to pay on workman's comp on those lost hours either. And I'm just wondering what the lost revenue is to insurance companies and if, in fact, that constitutes insurance fraud if they're not paying in.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm incapable of addressing that question. I'm not certain we have that ability in the department, but I'd be happy to look into it for you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. And to the author, I'm looking forward to hearing some of those responses in the next committee stops.
I just want a copy of you defending insurance companies on the tape.
It doesn't happen often, Mr. Chair. That's all I have. Let's open this up to Representative Chair Hornstein, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, for this excellent bill. I'm in strong support. I just wanted to see maybe for the Assistant Commissioner again or the author, is Dolley currently able to recover wages owed, you know, on, if there's, you know, wage theft?
Mr. Chair, members, I have our program director here, Mr. John Aiken, that would be happy to elaborate on the answer to your question, if that's acceptable to you.
Please.
So my name is John Aiken. I'm the director of Labor Standards and Apprenticeship at the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for inviting me to this hearing. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, the question is, are we able to collect back wages and final wages for the people of for the workers in Minnesota? And the answer to that, of course, is yes. We have a 9 FTEs currently working in investigations in the Labor Standards Unit, addressing issues related to minimum wage, overtime, deductions. In terms of what has already been spoken here today, we closed over nearly 600 cases last year, which is a lot larger than the year before. We've also had a record number of final wage claims. Those are the last that last paycheck that somebody has left their job, and their employer hasn't paid them. And so we have used some of those additional resources that we've received to expand our hours and to provide that direct service to workers and provide them the ability to get their wages back. So I think in last year in particular, I think it was 670,000 just in final wage claims.
Thank you. Go ahead. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. Would this involve recouping full wages? We heard one of the members of SATUL indicate they had a claim and had very partial, extremely partial wages owed. So are you talking about full wages that are owed to these workers?
I can handle that one.
And Chair Mahoney.
You can correct me if I'm wrong. I think I've got this one down. More often than not, what the Department of Labor and Industry is able to collect outside of overtime and last check and some benefits is the minimum wage. So if you are scheduled to receive $12 an hour and you're not paid, more often than not, all that can be collected or is collected is the minimum wage. And frankly, I can't remember what it is right now, whether it's federal minimum wage or Minnesota's minimum wage. But you would not collect your $12 because minimum wage is neither one.
One last question, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hornstein.
And again, either for, I guess this then would be for Representative Mahoney. So would your bill be able to cover that gap then between the minimum wage and full wages owed?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein.
Representative
yes.
Mahoney.
We would be with this bill, and I can't remember exactly where it is in the language, what page and line number, but it allows for full collection of full wages.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, to that point, please. Just to that point.
Please, Mr. Or excuse me, Representative.
Well, I don't care. So why is that? Why is it that, is it in statute? Is it in rules within Dolly? Because I haven't gotten a clear answer. You kind of looked at them. I want to know what is the origin for that, and I apologize for injecting here, but I think there's a lot of people that would probably ask that question.
Chair Mahoney, a response?
You want the answer from them, I'll let them do it.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the question. We have certain, we can issue orders for violations of state minimum wage, state overtime after 48 hours. In terms of this bill, the analysis is it's a regular rate of, so whatever your regular rate of pay is that you receive, regardless of whether or not it's minimum wage or more, is part of this bill.
So, Mr. Chair, and to Chair that Mahoney. Particular point, when they collect the minimum wage, the employee then has to, if they want the full wage, they have to go into small claims court and all that that entails. The fees that the sheriff charges to serve, the collection agency or the sheriff's office that collects that, and those fees are all taken out. So quite often it's not even worth going after that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see the look on your face, too, but where is that in statute or rule? That's what I'm asking, because I'm willing to work with you to fix stuff like that. But please explain to me specifically where those rules or statutes exist.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the question. I may have to call up one of my experts here, but I believe it's under 17727 as well as Chapter 181.
What was this?
Chapter 181, excuse me.
Thank you. Next up we have Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner and Representative Mahoney. I heard a couple business people say here that this is creating onerous records that they're going to be required to maintain. Aren't they currently required to keep records of who works for them and what the hours they work? Aren't they supposed to keep that already?
Mr. Chairman,
please
members,
testify.
The answer is yes.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, or Chair Mahoney, so what additional record keeping is required in this bill to make it so onerous that they have to keep these records?
I think there is one.
Chair Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe there is one, and I don't have the bill memorized. I can't remember the exact line, page and line, and I believe it requires them to identify piecework. And more to the point, I think what employers are worried about is getting caught up on a technicality or a mistake. And that's why you would have, that's why the citation piece is in there. So if a citation is written to the employer can say, you know, geez, I'm sorry, I didn't read it. I didn't see that. I'm happy to pay the additional $50 or $150. And that citation essentially goes away like a parking ticket so I understand and have talked to a couple of the people who testified about that onerous or that fear. And I'm happy to work with them on that. I think it's less of a fear that it would happen. You know, we've tried to put into this bill avenues that employers, if they're caught in a mistake, can actually relatively quickly. I know it's kind of annoying to go down to the courthouse and explain that their ticket was written 2 minutes before my parking meter went off, but we have to stop for it. We have to help 40,000 people in the state of Minnesota. So.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Mahoney. Having had a couple instances in my working years there where I had employers try to cheat me out of my pay, I have great sympathy for this. And they're talking about the penalties, raising the penalties. I'm reading in the language of the bill, it's all of them are not a strict penalty, but it's up to $10,000 or $1,000, up to $10,000, I think you're raising it to. I think that would give the department leeway to be able to say, okay, if it was an honest mistake, correct it, don't do it again, and we'll waive the fine or we'll do a lesser fine. But I've seen in the construction industry and good union contractors sometimes where they try and cheat employers. When I was an apprentice a couple years ago, journeyman I worked with talked about a contractor he worked for, and he put money in the paycheck or in the bank to pay 7 out of his 8 employees. And as soon as they got their check, they'd race to the bank, and whoever was the 8th one there got cheated out of his pay for that week. So, I mean, this is something that goes on a lot, and I think this is a good bill that starts working in the right direction to make sure employees get the pay that they earned, and good employers aren't being cheated out of work because the guy they're competing against, bidding jobs against, is getting by paying his people less, and therefore cheating those good contractors out of the work that they should get.
Thank you.
Representative Rurick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, you know, for the most part, this is a very good bill. Testimony we heard today, these are the things we want to stop. And I think we've shown the commitment with the extra budgeting that we gave to Dolly to go after this. But we do have a couple of things. And like one that I would like to ask for a little clarification is on page 4. And it looks like we are at 4.7. We're talking that we're going to, is that supposed to define wage theft, the sections underneath it?
I'm sorry, what was the last?
So on page 4, line 7, it looks like we're saying that what follows after is that supposed to be the definition for what wage theft is?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Mahoney.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Representative Vogel.
Oh, I get
it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, Representative Rick.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, number 5, we're talking about retaliation. Does that really belong under wage theft, or should that be considered something different?
Chair Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rick, I think staff and the advisor wrote the bill. I went with where they put it. If you have a better place to put it, that's fine. Certainly take a look, but I'll talk to staff over between here and judiciary because it doesn't belong there, it doesn't belong there. But yes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I mean, I guess I was looking at that thinking that just doesn't, that's not a portion of wage theft. It should be considered under something else. And I think some of it we look at is, we have so many good contractors out there. I do want to just ask if you're willing to keep working. Like I said, one of the questions that was brought to me was a little unclear where the paperwork should be kept. Say you have a company has 5 different offices. Is it going to be allowed that they keep it in one location, even if all the employees aren't at that location? Or will they have to keep documents for each employee at each location? And in our construction industry especially. So I guess that's just a clarification I would like.
Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, under the way this bill is written, my expectation would be if it's a construction site, more often than not, it's in a pickup truck in a, you know, 12x12 storage file cabinet that the job foreman or the job superintendent keeps the wage records. Those are weekly shipped off to the home office, whether that's the person's basement or they have an office like Krauss Anderson would have. I believe that they would have to be kept at Krauss Anderson, if that's the company. And I want everyone to understand that I believe Krauss Anderson pays their employees on time in its entirety. I do not think, I want to reiterate that we're doing this because there's a series, there's a group of bad apples. Most employers in the state of Minnesota do a good job of paying their employees, whether they're union or non-union, whether they're day laborers or they're weekly laborers or they're peace. get paid by the piece. I want that clear, and I want it on the record that I believe most of our businesses in this state are good people trying to do the right thing. But when you have 40,000 people or more that are affected by those bad apples, we have to do something. So back to your question, I believe there's going to have to be some clarification by the department where they would expect, because I can't tell you in your business, I can't tell you where to keep your records at all times. I can't tell Medtronic or I can't tell any of these other places where to keep their records, because if you have many large companies in this state have a headquarters in downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul or Bloomington or wherever, and their plant is in Brooklyn Center or their plant is in Shakopee, you're going to keep some records at Shakopee, but you're going to keep the rest of them at the headquarters.
And one last.
Representative Rick, your senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one last, I get more of a point. I think this ultimately is a very good bill, but we heard from a couple of the groups, most of our businesses are very good, but I have a real problem when we take out the language when dealing with intent. The companies that are taking wages from people are intending to do that. And so I think when we take out the idea that whether it was intentional or not intentional, that we're making it a crime. So that's where I have the problem with where we're going in this bill, just by removing that language from the statute. I think the good apples who make a mistake, I don't want to see them being punished. So I would like to have conversations to see if we can change that part of it.
Mr. Chair. We certainly have time between now and the judiciary, which I think that's more of a judiciary issue when you take out legal language, intent and non-intent. But I think that is an integral part of moving these cases through the process sooner and quicker and getting these people their money. I don't expect, seeing how the Department of Labor typically has a labor law commissioner, a commissioner who is a labor lawyer and a lawyer, they're not going to be intent on getting into a constitutional challenge. But we can certainly work on that. Yes.
Thank you. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for putting together the bill. I agree with Representative Rarick that nobody here believes that this should be going on, and it's nice to codify it. But being a small business owner and dealing with a lot of small businesses, as I read through this, I have concerns with some of the specificity because, when we look at from Subdivision 5 and the
way – line.
I'm sorry. Lines 4.28 through 5.9 and – talking about, okay, you're going to get this violation notice from Dolly, and it sounds in that paragraph as if you preemptively caught it yourself and corrected it, and Dolly agrees with you, then you might be assessed a fine, but it would be pretty much over. Is that the way it would be interpreted?
Chair Mahoney? Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your question. The citation, the analysis of the citation is the assessment of a monetary penalty for a wage claim of less than $1,000. Just for a point of reference, we handled 1,363 wage claims in the last year, which were a record. Of those, I'm going to say 40% of those were actually referred to conciliation court. Of those 40%, I believe 40% were below the $1,000 threshold that we're talking about here, which amounts to possibly 270, maybe 300 claims. So In terms of the citation, from how I'm reading the bill, the monetary penalty is assessed along with the claim. If the employer then provides information through that civil process to show, no, indeed, I did pay John $900 or whatever, the commissioner shall review that citation again and vacate that citation based upon the information received.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm still not completely clear, but I know we need to move on. So then we get into subdivision 6, which is the administrative review. And it says if the employer does not request a hearing or if the employer's written request for hearing is not served the 15th day, the citation becomes final and is not subject to review by any court. Could you explain the ramifications of that, please?
Mr. Chair
Maroney?
I believe that's something that might have to, I can make an attempt, but that would more or less be in the judiciary area and would take care, I'll be trying to address that in Chairman Lesh's judiciary and civil law. But as I read it, if you don't contest the citation within 15 days, there are some legal ways that you can go back and be heard again. But you've said, yeah, just like your parking ticket. Yeah, I was 2 minutes over my parking time, and here's your $15. Well, actually, the last time I paid a parking ticket, it was a lot more than $15. But, that's the way I read it.
Okay, Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, and this is where I believe we need to do something about this, but I'm really concerned about small employers. First of all, it's a little bit ambiguous, it sounds like, what might happen. And secondly, is 15 days, that's not a long time. And third, I'm a small employer myself. If I get a notice from Dolly that I'm doing something wrong or some other place that I'm doing something wrong, the first thing that goes through my mind is, do I need legal assistance here because I'm in trouble? And that's very expensive. And what I'm wondering here is if we can make this more clear so that we don't unfairly push our small businesses into unnecessary expenses, or if there can't be some type of resolution process, because 15 days isn't much. And so that becomes a concern there. And I'm gathering with the question that there's still some ambiguity, and maybe it will be handled in civil law or whatever the committee is now called. But it tends to go throughout this bill that there seems to be these things that are a little bit uncertain yet, and yet if you're an employer and you get the notice, you're on the hook. And I've only got 15 days, 2 weeks basically, to figure it out. So if it's going to be worked out, that's fine, but I do think that's a serious point. 5.31 is much more concerning for me, because it basically sounds like I'm guilty until I prove myself innocent. And I'm curious if that's the intent here.
Response, Chair Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, again, it's a citation, just like you would get a citation for speeding or parking. If you don't respond to your speeding ticket, you're guilty. Mm-hmm. And I would prefer to have a stronger law to help workers that are having money stolen from them.
Mm-hmm. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it pretty much it makes me wonder then, as a small employer, if I can afford to even have the expedited review, because I'm pretty much being told that I'm guilty before I start, aren't I?
Chair Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No. Just again, to use the parking example, If you say nothing, you agree you're guilty. If you say no, I am not guilty of this particular violation, this parking violation, and I am willing to show you, you know, the electronic parking tickets now, or meters now give you the time when it runs out, and your ticket. Actually, the police officer has to write down the time, date and time. There you go. You wrote the ticket at 5 o'clock, and my meter went to 5:05. Yes, it's annoying to have to go down, as I said, to show it, take photocopies or electronic copies or whatever, and send them off to the commissioner. But that's the route that you would go. That in itself, with the way this is written, helps 40,000 people get their money.
One more time, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know we need to move on, but I'm looking at this, and I'm going to read it. It says, when an employer to whom a citation under Subdivision 5 was issued requests an expedited hearing under the paragraph, the employer is presumed to have committed each violation in the citation. And this isn't a parking ticket to a small business. If I'm going to get a citation for not paying a fair wage, and it gets into the newspaper because it's a violation, it can get there. How am I going to hire anybody? And I'm not against this bill. I think it's a good idea, but I really think we have a lot of work in cleaning this up, because there's things in here that can really hurt a small employer, especially because we don't have the resources. Even when it talks about policies, there's a lot of employers I know that have 4, 5, 6, 7 employees. They don't have policies. They have ways in which they act, but they don't necessarily have policies. And I really think that going forward, some of this stuff in here is so specified that if we're going to put small employers to this test, and it ends up that they're basically convicted, whether you want to call it a parking ticket or this, we might lose a lot of small employers and a lot of jobs, and a lot of people will be harmed rather than helped. So. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Mahoney, one of the examples of wage theft that I did not hear today was the deduction of credit card fees from tips. How would this bill affect that situation?
Chair Mahoney?
That's good luck. A good question. That one I do not have an answer for. I can get back to you unless the phone a friend group here can help me out.
Mr. Atkins. Chairman, members, the bill doesn't address that particular question. So I'm sorry you phoned a friend. There was nobody home. but we can find out more information for you on that, of how it applies. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a quick conversation about statute 177.27 and subdivision 3. It says if the records, and this was about the minimum wage and collecting $12 an hour, the minimum wage or whatever, subdivision 3 under 177.27 specifically gives the if the records maintained by the employer do not provide sufficient information to determine the exact amount of back wages due an employee, the commissioner may make a determination of wages due based on available evidence and mediate settlement. So the commissioner already has the authority. So I'm really confused as to where that discrepancy is coming from there. So that's just a point, and maybe you'll get back to us someday. I am concerned about, we keep hearing 40,000, that number over and over again. And if memory serves me correctly, when we did this back in 17, that was the same number. The question I have is specifically, where does the number come from? And does it refer to just wage theft? Or is it any kind of labor claim that would be disassociated with this bill?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your question. The analysis was performed by our research and statistics team at the Department of Labor and Industry. What they took into account, from my understanding, was the number of cases which were handled with the Department of Labor and Industry itself, In addition to that, what the local U.S. Department of Labor's wage and hour division handled in this district, as well as a search of large cases related to labor standards violations that had been that had been adjudicated, I believe, over the course of 2012 to 2016. I can look back at that, but I believe that was the combination. Thank you.
Representative Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But specifically of the 40,000, Commissioner McClellan, maybe you can answer. How many of those are specific to wage theft?
Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. From my understanding, so the cases from the Department of Labor's perspective, Department of Labor and Industry, those cases are final wage claims, which are those claims that are paid related to people's final paycheck. And then, of course, we have cases related to minimum wage violations and overtime violations, deductions, as well as a confiscation of tips. So those cases are taken into consideration. Now, in addition to that, of course, the Wage and Hour Division at the U.S. Department of Labor, it's my understanding that they took into account those particular cases of minimum wage violations and overtime. And as to the larger lawsuits, I would have to get back to you on that. I don't know specifically related to the details of those particular cases.
Thank you, Representative Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think it's really important that we get the breakdown of those numbers so that we know specifically what's being defined in here as wage theft versus the 40,000. I feel like the 40,000 number isn't an accurate reflection of what Chair Mahoney, and I applaud you for trying to recapture wages. I think it's deplorable if somebody is willfully doing these types of things. The other thing, so can I get a commitment from the chair that you will we'll get that information?
If I may.
Excuse me, let's one chair at a time. Okay. Chair Mahoney, please respond.
Representative Fabian, minimum wage violations is wage theft.
Yep, I understand that.
Confiscation is wage theft. Overtime violations where you don't pay it is wage theft. That is the basis for the 40,000. So the 40,000, the estimate, both federal and taking into consideration federal and state numbers, is a real number. It's not some number that was pulled out of the air because it sounds good. Wage theft encompasses any time you violate somebody's pay over their pay period, whether it's minimum wage violations or tip confiscation. It's all wage theft, and 40,000 is a pretty good number.
One more, we have to move on. We have
Thank
three
you, Mr. Chair. So then the other thing that I would like from the department, and I think that we can we agree
Fabian.
That we'd like to get the data for the 40,000.
More data is great.
Very good. So in the last biennium, and you mentioned it, and I applaud you for that, the $1 million that the department got, can we get a specific accounting of just exactly how that money was spent? And then in terms of that, what was how did we actually impact wage theft? I think that would be very useful information. And the other question I had is on the fines. If someone is fined, whatever the number is, where does that money go? Does that just kind of go back into the agency? Does it go to the general fund? Those types of things.
Commissioner.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for your question. For the latter question, that goes into the general fund, correct? The agency doesn't see that money. Representative, I can give you anecdotally what we've done with that money, and we can give you a more detailed accounting later.
Please.
So, for example, we have hired four new staff. One was is a full-time wage theft outreach coordinator. We have responded to 25,000 inquiries we've been capable to in this last year as compared to 16,000 the previous year, just because now we have greater capacity. We streamlined our wage claim process to assist workers faster. The turnaround time used to be around a month. Now we're down to 4 to 5 days. So it greatly increased our capacity. We've now been able to invest in a new case management system, which has greatly hasn't yet, but it will really enhance our ability to get rid of some of the paperwork and just do more, actually, wage theft investigations. So we're excited about that. We've expanded our phone hours to reach people that actually are working and don't have the time to call us during the working hours. And we've launched a comprehensive wage theft outreach program that we've been many different areas, too numerous to discuss today, where we've done a lot of outreach, community engagement, and we have some really good numbers that we'd be happy to share with you in detail.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is a little bit is more to the department. Why does Dolly need the citation authority? Why does Dolly need citation authority?
Chair Mahoney?
I did not hear it.
Is my mic working here? Why does Dolly need the citation authority?
Why is Dolly given this authority?
Yeah.
Because I like, no. Representative Cagle, my understanding is they've had this for a long time. My 20 years here, they've always had this particular authority. I'll toss it to you, to my friends here, if they have a better reason.
Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, members, thanks for the question. The citation itself is new as a part of this bill, but the strategy here, of course, is that already we're putting resources to address people who contact us to say, I didn't receive my final paycheck. And, just a quick review of the database before I walked in here today. I mean, we've had wage claims for a couple of thousand. We've had wage claims for as little as $21. But that $21 is a tank of gas to get to work the next day. And so we could use the citation process as a way to strategically address those types of claims that come to us where somebody is trying to get that final paycheck.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Detmer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, you mentioned that 99.9% of our businesses are good employers. So we're looking at 0.1% that we have some bad boys out there. And so can we say that 1% is responsible for that 40,000 cases that we're working on? And this might be a question to you or for Dolly. It was already asked about the $1 million that was put out to work and solve this waste theft problem that we have in Minnesota. So what is it going to take to solve it? Is it more money to Dolly, or what are we looking at here?
Chair Mahoney.
I think there's two parts to that question. The question of money certainly will be answered in the Jobs Committee, but I think $1 million that was put into this the last biennium is a good start. Do I think they need $10 million or something? No. Do they need an inflationary increase? Probably. And the other half of your question, the first half?
Well, you got 1% of the yes. Businesses that are 0.1% that are the bad boys. And can it be centered on those types of businesses? I mean, what type of businesses are we talking about at that 0.1%?
I've always been saying it runs the gamut from construction to hotels and their cleaning services to restaurants to landscape. My friend Representative Nelson and I have both had to suffer through this a little bit here and there. I'm sure you get it in retail. I don't know that there is a list that is the most common, but maybe you have one. I don't know.
And Mr. Chair, yeah, if that is a list that Dolly has, it'd be maybe something good to share with this committee. And you know, we want, you know, if we have 99.9% of those businesses that are doing a great job are paying their employees, you know, we need to be taking a look at those groups that are not at that 0.1%.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair. Mahoney. Representative Detmer, you know, 99.999% of the people don't go out and murder people. But we have laws against that. You know, and I can make all sorts of examples about where we make a law that 99.999% of the people don't, would never think to do something like that, whether it's speeding or shooting somebody. But when you have the bad apples, we have to go after them when that's literally taking food off the table or a roof over their heads or gas out of their gas tank so they can't get to work. And as far as a list, you know, I will ask Dolly to see if they have something along those lines, but I'm sure what they'd have to do is just go back and take a list of how many their citations and say who it was. And not sure the public information would be able to work with that, but I'll leave that up to you. Would you be able to do that?
Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, thank you. We are working currently on upgrading our case management system that that's running out of service, and so we're upgrading some of our processes related to that. And one of the things that we're looking at is it's about occupations, it's about address, zip code, it's about industry. Right now, the department, while we can go through and look at the individual records and possibly attach that to the industry of hospitality or whether or not it's a hotel or whether or not it's construction, we'd have to go and do that by hand. But the hope is with this new system and these processes that we're putting into place are going to be able to capture some of that information. So it gets to the point of your list, which is we know that just from talking with our investigators, many of the complaints that we hear about are in the restaurant and hospitality. We hear it about home health care. So those are just some general comments about related to industry. But that's the hope related to this this investment in our case management system, is to track some more of this information more at that granular level.
Thank you.
Just to okay. Follow up, maybe
quickly,
just a
please.
Comment.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And who is in charge of your IT? Is it Minute, or who's taking care of that for you?
I can address that, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, please.
Yes, Minute is our service provider, but we act as the one that decides on the vendor that we choose. We are active in the selection process. And I will say on behalf of the Department of Labor and Industry, we have an excellent record with what we've done with construction codes and licensing. When we came together, we now issue permits, licenses immediately online. We've had a good track record. So that is our challenge, to continue to be excellent in what we do.
Thank you. Representative Brand.
Well, I was thinking exactly the same thing as Representative Claflin, so I don't have an additional question.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I get the last word on this. One thing that I did not bring up when I was talking about the insurance and the lost revenue is some of the benefits. Some of these jobs carry benefits with them, be it retirement benefits or health benefits. And some people, when they get stiffed on the wages, that's what you're dealing with, and that's what we've been talking about all day. But there's some benefits out there that have monetary value as well, and I don't know how effective the department has been in helping recover benefits. Can you give me an answer, Commissioner, in 30 seconds?
Mr. Chair, members, no, we don't have that ability. We have the ability to go after wages, but not the benefits of the other. Yes.
Thank you. My point being that the worker comes up short again. The author, you have the last word on your bill, please.
Good bill. Vote for it.
Okay. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 6 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation that it be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes. Thank you. We are adjourned.